Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap, and it has finally happened. The day has finally come. We are bracing ourselves for the departure of our dear Matt Turner. It has been great to see him blossom into the United States-level national team keeper that he is, from an undrafted goalkeeper signed to training camp out of Fairfield University to one of the world's best goalkeepers. Matt Turner is linked to Arsenal, is expected to depart the New England Revolution, go to England in the summer, and here to talk about it all today is, well, me and Sean Donahue. Sean, how is it going?
You know, it was a good day until I watched the U.S. men's national team fall 2-0 to Canada today, in which Tejan Buchanan, who is no longer a Revolution player, completely dominated against the U.S. national team. And Matt Turner, I think, had the worst game he's had in a U.S. jersey. So it's a good thing it sounds like that Arsenal contract is signed, because I don't think his value went up today.
Yes, no refunds, Arsenal. The ink is dried. It is a done deal. Allegedly, pretty much every soccer reporter who has a blue check mark has reported that it is a done deal. It has not been officially announced by the team or Arsenal, but it is heavily, heavily expected. The fee has been ranged from, I believe I saw, the lowest I saw was about £5 million. The highest I saw was about £7 million. I also saw $7 million. So I'm just going to kind of pick a middle point, and the deal is somewhere around $7 million up front, with $3 million of incentives that are apparently very achievable. So this is $7 to $10 million transfer fee for Matt Turner, allegedly. But as part of the deal, it sounds like Matt Turner will be able to play for the New England Revolution for the first bit and move in the summer transfer window. Sean, seems like this was a long time coming. I think we all knew that Matt Turner had bigger aspirations to go to Europe, and it seems like now that he is cracked in and is fighting for the starting gig with the United States men's national team goalkeeper spot, today's results aside, it seemed like this was eventually going to happen. What is your reaction to this news?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good price for the Revolution. I think, you know, this was inevitably going to happen, as you said, at some point. Going to Arsenal is a huge step up. You know, they're one of the top teams in England, so it's a great move financially for Matt Turner and prestige-wise for Matt Turner. You know, my one question is, you know, how is he going to get playing time outside of cup games? I think he's going to be kind of in the Zach Steffen situation at Man City, where he's the cup goalkeeper, but he's not going to sniff league action unless their starting goalkeeper gets hurt. You know, for context, they signed Ramsdale this past summer for, I think, £30 million or something around that amount. So, you know, you get the sense of, you know, three times what they're paying for Matt Turner, maybe more than that. And he's, you know, a 23-year-old goalkeeper that recently just got capped for England and has been named their player of the month at Arsenal at least twice this season since they've signed him. So, you know, he's playing really, really well. He's younger than Matt Turner. He could potentially be the future number one for England. You know, it's going to take a lot for Matt Turner to unseat him. With that said, if you're Matt Turner, I don't think you can turn down, you know, what could very well be a 10 times pay increase. And if you're the Revolution, I don't think you can turn down, you know, a transfer fee that sounds like it's going to be more than what Columbus got for Zach Steffen. So it makes a lot of sense that with this offer on the table that both parties have accepted it. But I am concerned that Matt Turner is going to struggle to get much playing time. And I think he's a goalkeeper that, as we've seen, improves every single game. Because he's someone that got such a late start, there's still a lot of improvement that he's been doing. And I think it's unfortunate that while he'll have, you know, fantastic training with some of the best players in the world and improve that way, that he's not going to get a lot of game time with Arsenal.
Yeah, and just for context, too, I think Matt Turner re-upped last year. He signed another contract extension with the Rebs, and he's still not paid amongst the highest paid goalkeepers in MLS. I think he's around 16th to 18th or something like that in the league. I think he's making around $350,000. And that's after his most recent extension. He just has a team-friendly contract. He came up as a undrafted free agent, and so he kind of spent some time on the supplemental roster, and kind of over time has just been signing extension after extension and getting small raises here and there. But obviously Premier League wages just are, you know, much, much higher than MLS in general, and especially for goalkeepers, where it seems like, these American teams, MLS teams, try to develop American goalkeepers and try to get on kind of cheaper and cheaper. There aren't many goalkeepers that make $500,000 plus. I think Matt Turner is certainly going to appreciate it from a financial side of things. I think he's going to get paid. The one thing I do kind of hesitate on is the playing side of it. He obviously won't get too much playing time. Sean, what's your reaction about him going to Arsenal? I mean, to me, it would make more sense, especially if he's trying to win the starting gig for the United States, to go to a different team. I figured maybe he'd end up in the Bundesliga. Maybe he'd end up with a smaller, kind of lower tier team in the Premier League. But Arsenal is really it's a giant club. And just to kind of put this into context, when I told my wife that Matt Turner was going to Arsenal, she knew it was a big deal because she's heard of Arsenal before. To me, I'm flat out stunned. And this move, as you said, I don't know. I hesitate and I worry that this might not be great for Matt Turner in the long run, because even though he is getting paid, the playing time is probably going to be lacking.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you completely. I think if Matt Turner wants to win the starting job for the U.S. men's national team, especially this year, I mean, he's aided by Zach Steffen being hurt again. So if Zach Steffen can't stay healthy, that changes everything. But assuming Zach Steffen's healthy, I agree. I think he needed to move to a team where he was going to be playing regularly. And that's not going to happen at Arsenal. With that said, there's no guarantee that there was another team out there that was willing to pay this type of money for Matt Turner for him to play regularly. We didn't hear many rumors about, a team, maybe a mid-table Premier League club or a lower mid-table Premier League club that, might have given him a chance to start right away, or, a team in the Bundesliga, a team in Spain, a team in Italy that he could have had a chance to start. So I without knowing that was on the table, it's kind of hard to say, he should have done something different. Certainly I feel like that you might not get from a mid-table or a lower tier club. But I agree with you. He's not going to play a lot at Arsenal unless something happens to Ramsdale. Maybe the best thing that could happen for Matt Turner is that, Ramsdale, after another year or two, plays so well that an even bigger team spends a ton of money to sign him and makes an opening for Matt Turner, because otherwise I don't see where that opening is going to come from. As a Spurs fan, disappointed to see him go to Arsenal. But when I even look at, other situations that might have been better for him, and again, this was not something that we heard was on the table, so it's, kind of a moot point. But hypothetically, a team like Spurs would have made a lot more sense, where they have a 35-year-old goalkeeper that's, probably only got a year or two left in him, and that, Matt Turner could have been a backup for a couple of years with a clear path to be a starter down the road. Because with Arsenal right now, there is no clear path to being a starter. He's backing up a much younger keeper that's an English international that's, what they bought for a lot more money. So, again, we don't know of any other opportunities that were on the table that he could have taken to actually get playing time. So with all of that said, it would have been very hard for him to turn down this chance to play for Arsenal, even if there is no clear path. And we all know that Matt Turner is someone that, believes very highly in himself and has proven himself so many times before when, he's come out of nowhere. So I'm sure in his head, he probably thinks he does have a chance at some point to start for Arsenal. But it is a very big long shot.
It was pointed out to me, too, that we haven't done a Tottenham 20 in a little bit, and get a quick update on Tottenham and how Spurs are doing. In 20 seconds, can you give me how emotionally conflicted you are with Matt Turner going to Arsenal?
I think he's not going to play in the meaningful game. So I think I'm not conflicted, and it will actually be even more motivation for Spurs to crush Arsenal and score a lot of goals against Ramsdale to help Matt Turner's case to be the starter, is how I view it,
I see. How is Tottenham doing, by the way? I have no idea, because I have not asked you how they're doing in a long time.
If you'd asked me a week ago, I would have been very pleased, because they had not lost a game in, I believe, 9 games since Conte became the head coach. He was unbeaten his first 9 games with the new Spurs record, and then they promptly got crushed 2-0 by Chelsea and looked really bad last weekend. But it was going much better until last weekend.
I'm going to have to start following the Premier League results again and get back in the habit of asking you how Tottenham is doing, but only when they lose. So I'll have to be better on that. I apologize to our listeners who are curious where the Tottenham 20 was. But let's bring it back to this side of the pond. Let's talk about how the Matt Turner transfer is going to impact the Revolution. And we did get some comments from our listeners on Twitter. Og says his reaction to this is similar to when the rumors started replacing Matt Turner, and his value will be almost impossible. But we can negate that with some other additions. And then Sam Minton of the Bent Musket asked us, who do you think replaces Turner? And Paulo asked us, assuming that they use Turner bucks for a goalkeeper replacement, do you wait until he's gone or do you bring in someone sooner? So a lot of questions here related to Matt Turner and what the Revolution do next with him leaving. What do you think the Revolution's plan is, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of money to play with, but you know, with the MLS league rules, there's only so much you can do with it. They're not going to, you know, get rid of Buxa and use a DP spot on a goalkeeper. At least they shouldn't. That'd be very stupid. You know, they could make a trade within the league. There's a number of, you know, veteran keepers. I know the Crew a couple years ago, I can't remember if they still do, but they had two really, really strong keepers on their roster. You know, there's a number of things that they could do. My expectation, to be honest, is that, you know, this season they'll use Matt Turner for half the year that they have him. You know, what's great is that they'll have him through the whole Champions League. So hopefully they can, you know, ride him to make some waves there. And then, you know, I think unless somebody who's on the roster now, unless, you know, Earl Edwards or is it Jacobson, the goalkeeper they drafted?
Jacob Johnson-Jackson.
Yeah, there you go.
Jacobson. Jacob Jackson.
So unless Jacob Jackson or Earl Edwards steps up, I think it'll probably be Brad Knighton for half a year, and then the Revolution in the offseason will need to figure out what their long-term plans are. Or, you know, if Bruce Arena sees in the first 6 months of the season that he's not happy with what he's seeing from his options, you know, maybe they trade for somebody mid-season, you know, a veteran in MLS once, you know, Turner's off the books. I don't think they're going to make a big splash at goalkeeper. I think that money is going to be better used, you know, somewhere else when, you know, they're going to make a U22 initiative signing, which probably won't be a goalkeeper. Or, you know, if Buxa leaves when they're trying to replace him, more money that can go towards that. And you know, you're not going to be able to get what you got from Matt Turner for his salary. So that is the tough thing. When you lose a guy like Matt Turner, you know, he's at a very good salary for what he provides the Revolution. So that's, you know, Revs have a number of guys like that. You know, DeJuan Jones, who's been very underpaid for what he provides the Revs. If he were to leave, it would be impossible to replace him for that money. Tejan Buchanan, who was on a Generation Adidas contract, that wasn't counting against the cap for the Revs. Obviously, you couldn't replace him for that money. So that's kind of the tough situation the Revs are in, where they're getting a lot of money for these guys. They can put, you know, $1.05 million or something like that into GAM. So they can use that to help expand kind of their salary cap a bit. But that's about the extent of it. Otherwise, you can't use that money towards a player unless it's, you know, as a transfer fee for either a designated player or, you know, U22 guy, or, you know, to some extent for some of the discretionary TAM that you might buy. But, you know, I think goalkeeper is not a position that they're going to spend a lot of money on. I think they're going to either use what they have in-house or, you know, make a trade within the league midway through the season.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I want to unpack that a little bit just so people don't get lost, because sometimes we throw around these terms. And just to make sure everyone knows, when you make a transfer, you can convert $1.05 million into GAM, general allocation money, which basically allows you to expand your salary cap. You know, teams get, there's a salary cap, and then there's allocation money that they can buy down salaries with. So with Tejan Buchanan, you know, the really essentially his replacement was more or less Sebastian Legette. I mean, it's not a like for like. I think Legette fits more into a diamond, whereas Tejan is a winger. But Tejan was sold for $7 million. The Revs converted 1.05 million of that, or they can convert 1.05 million of that into allocation money. And that allocation money was sent to LA essentially to acquire Legette. Now, Legette, as you mentioned, Sean, I mean, there's a salary difference here. Tejan Buchanan was on a Generation Adidas contract. Legette is making close to $1 million. So it's going to hurt them kind of in the long run there. But there's something kind of different here with the Matt Turner situation, because, as you said, goalkeeper isn't really a position. It's not like an attacker where you're going to spend a DP spot, or you're going to be spend a ton of money for, you know, a top line attacker or something like that. You're not going to use a DP spot on a goalkeeper. That does not work. I think that Philadelphia did that once. I can't think of many, you know, designated player goalkeepers or high priced goalkeepers, but a lot of times they just don't work. So, you know, you're going to sell Matt Turner and you're going to convert 1.05 million of that transfer fee into GAM. are you going to go out and spend $1 million on a goalkeeper? I know that LA just acquired a goalkeeper and sent, I think, about $1 million or $1.2 million or something like that for a goalkeeper. You know, are you going to go out and get a top of the line goalkeeper and spend that money that you can convert and bring in a new one? Or do you go with Brad Knighton? We've talked about Brad Knighton being a very good goalkeeper. He's been pretty reliable. He probably could have started for some lesser teams elsewhere around the league. Do you ride it out with him and then maybe use that $1 million of GAM on an attacking spot, on a, you know, build out your bench a little bit, maybe go out and acquire another midfielder in the diamonds to replace maybe Tommy McNamara? If Tommy McNamara is getting a lot of starts, maybe you want to increase that position. Maybe you have an injury. You know, if Matt Polster goes down and you need a new defensive midfielder, are you going to go out and spend that GAM somewhere else and use that as a trade asset? I think that might be what you end up doing. So it's very interesting because I think you have a very reliable goalkeeper in Brad Knighton who could handle it. There is obviously a drop off between Matt Turner and Brad Knighton, but I don't think he's the worst option in the world. And it'll be interesting to see who is not doing well this year around the league. Because if there is a team that is struggling and a goalkeeper comes on the trade market, maybe that's where the revs strike. You know, I'm not saying Eloy Room will be available, but like if Columbus struggles again and they're trying to shed payroll or something like that, if the revs offer $1.5 million worth of allocation money to go after Eloy Room, do they take it? I mean, maybe. So maybe that's the way they go. But I don't see them going out and spending, you know, TAM or a designated player spot on a goalkeeper. I think a lot of people kind of see the $7 million and say, well, we have $7 million worth of money to go after a new goalkeeper. And that's probably not what's going to happen. They're probably going to save that money for their next designated player, which I know we talked about a couple episodes ago about, you know, when Buxa leaves or whenever the next DP spot opens up, they need to go out and spend this kind of purse they've built up and go out and get a real superstar. I think that's what they're going to end up doing here. And I think they're going to go with kind of a cheaper option, but it's going to be interesting to see them try to navigate not overspending on a goalkeeper, but finding a goalkeeper that is quality enough to replace Matt Turner. And I don't know, I'm not, it's going to be very tough. It's going to be a very, very tough balance to hit.
Yeah. And we talked about it before, but you know, one guy that it's still disappointing to me that is no longer part of the organization is Joe Rice, because he did so well for Revs 2 last year that it would have been nice to have him in the mix as Turner's possible replacement. And I agree. I think Brad Knighton is perfectly capable of filling in for 6 months this season after Turner leaves, but you know, he turns 37 in a week. So I don't think he's the long-term option. And, you know, there are goalkeepers that play well into their 40s, but usually those are goalkeepers that, you know, have been starting regularly throughout their careers and were stars. And, you know, maybe the fact he has less games will help his body hold up better as he gets older, or maybe he won't have, you know, the endurance necessary to go through a full season because he hasn't played a full season in a very long time. So I don't know how that's going to play out, but I think Brad Knighton is, you know, perfectly capable of filling in for Matt Turner after he leaves this season. But then I think when you go into 2023, he's probably not your long-term option.
I agree. Do we both agree that right now on this roster, Brad Knighton would be the person to replace Matt Turner? I know some people think Jacobson might replace him. And some people are throwing out maybe Earl Edwards Jr. Earl Edwards got the start yesterday. We're in agreement that Brad Knighton is the guy to take over as of right now.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen Jackson play to make an assessment of his play. You know, I think if he was lighting it up, that maybe he would have started this game over Earl Edwards. And I think if Earl Edwards was, you know, playing really well, that, you know, he might have gotten some chances when Brad Knighton didn't start well last year in his first appearance. So I think Brad Knighton's the guy. Like I've said before, I'm surprised Earl Edwards is still on the roster. But the fact that he started this first game and that they did bring him back, I guess he was under guaranteed contract, but the fact that he is back, there's some faith in him. But I would be surprised if it wasn't Brad Knighton. You know, and I would not be surprised though if they did get to, you know, June and they weren't happy with their options, that they, you know, did go out and make some sort of trade within the league to improve that situation. But for now, I think it's Brad Knighton.
In a weird way, it almost hurts. I mean, it doesn't hurt the Revs, but in a weird way, you'd almost want to see Brad Knighton play a little bit. I wonder if they're going to give Brad Knighton some spot starts here and there to see how well he does, to see if that influences their decision when the summer window opens. Because I guess in theory, the European season will end, so maybe you could get someone on a free transfer or something like that You'd have to use an international spot probably. And again, it'd be a highly priced goalkeeper, which I think they will try to avoid. I think they'd rather spend that GAM, on a midfielder, an attacker, or in the trade market. But I almost wish that we could see Brad Knighton get a string of 6 to 8 games, kind of like we did last season, to see if that boosts our confidence in him a little bit. Because I think certainly in 2023, you're going to have to go out and get another goalkeeper. I don't see them getting one here in the first half of the season, to answer this question here from Paulo. I don't see them getting one in the first half of the season. I could see them getting one in the summer transfer window, but I also would not be shocked if they sign Jacob Johnson, Jackson Jacobson, as the third goalkeeper and have him play at Revs 2 and then have right out the season with Knightons and Edwards to see how that goes. I really don't think that the drop off is steep enough that, I don't know, I having Brad Knighton as your goalkeeper does not terrify me. Am I alone in that?
No, I agree with you. And I also agree with your point that in some sense, you kind of do wish you could make that change sooner. Obviously, 6 months of Matt Turner or 6 months of Matt Turner, you don't turn down 6 months of the best keeper in the league, especially because, that takes you to the Champions League, and I think he'll be huge in that. But with that said, I think you'd be, in some sense, in a better place, had you tested out Brad Knighton, Earl Edwards, whoever it is, in the first half of the season, and, then you could evaluate and decide that they weren't good enough to get you to a championship and make that move in the summer. Because I don't think that there's anything that Bruce Arena has to learn about Earl Edwards or Brad Knighton that he's going to learn from them, sitting on the bench and playing reserve games. I think he's seen enough of that to know who they are in that sense. And the step up to playing regularly for the first team is something different. And he's not going to get to experience that with Matt Turner on the roster for 6 months. And so he's not necessarily going to know after 6 months, whether or not he has the right pieces to make a championship run on the roster without making a trade at goalkeeper. You can't turn down 6 extra months of Matt Turner. Matt Turner is going to be huge for the Revs. They're going to, gain more points because he's there. And I think they're going to have a much better chance in the Champions League because he's there. But to some extent, it does hurt you long term because you don't necessarily know what you have going into the stretch at the end of the season and going into the most important games and going into the playoffs.
If you had to bet money on it, what do you think the Revs do? Do you think they just go out and buy another goalkeeper in the summer?
If I were to bet money, I'd say Brad Knighton's the starter for the second half of the season. And, they reassess things next year. And maybe Jacob Jackson performs really well and he becomes a starter. Or maybe, Earl Edwards is this hidden gem that I think is 30 years old now and hasn't really started anywhere and somehow is a late bloomer. But I think that this year they're probably going to stick with the goalkeepers that they have on the roster. That would be my guess. I'm not, I would not be surprised if they did make a change, but that would be my best guess.
Got another listener question here. Says, big Matt Turner fan, really loved him since day one, and now I'm going to start rooting for Arsenal in honor of Matt Turner, but unfortunately I don't have any Arsenal gear. Sean, where can this listener find some Arsenal gear?
I mean, I think I would go to Glocko Kits to get my Arsenal gear if I was going to buy some. Of course, I would never buy Arsenal gear. I'd recommend buying Spurs gear instead. In honor of former Rev Clint Dempsey, who was just elected to the National Soccer Hall of Fame today, which is exciting news, and played for Spurs as well as the Revs. But if you got to jump on the new bandwagon of Turner to Arsenal, Glocko Kits is the way to go.
Yeah, Glocko Kits, their mission is to bring unique vintage jerseys to your home with a catalog of jerseys, jackets, scarves, and more from clubs and national teams from over 80 countries in the world, including Arsenal and Spurs. If you're into Spurs, probably Arsenal. There's probably more Arsenal fans listening to this as of right now because of Matt Turner. So there's a ton of Arsenal merch. I checked before we recorded the podcast. Go check it out. Go check out Golasso Kits to get your new Arsenal merch, which is going to go very, very fast because Matt Turner will soon be the greatest goalkeeper in the world in the Premier League. He's going over to England to dominate. And while you're at Golasso Kits, check out their mystery kit packages, where if you can't tell what you want, you just put in your size and the style of jersey that you like, and Golasso will surprise you with the kit of your dreams. And there's more. If you use promo code REVSRECAP at checkout, you will save 15% off your order. That is promo code REVSRECAP at GolassoKits.com for 15% off your order. Links and code are in the show notes. And don't forget to follow them at GolassoKits on Twitter and on Instagram for their weekly unboxing videos. I think they have Spurs stuff. I didn't check because who's rooting for Spurs, Anyway.
I my money would be on Spurs to finish above Arsenal this year. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Matt Turner's not getting there to the summer. So I think we will. I'll give you that. There was another signing here by the Revs. Bruce Arena had his press, one of his first press conferences, either his first or second, and they asked if any more moves were coming, and Bruce said that there were some minor moves coming. There was going to be some minor tweaks to the roster, and he made a minor tweak, signing Noel Buck to the first team. He is the second youngest player for the Revolution, other than Diego Fagundes. He is signed from Revs 2. He is 16 years old. He was born one day after the Washington Nationals played their first game in their existence. So that's pretty rough for those of us over the age of 30. He's just making us feel extremely old. Sean, what are we did get a listener questions on how good do you think Noel will be, and do you expect him to have a role in the first team? So Sean, what are your thoughts on Noel Buck, the signing, and his potential role?
Yeah, I mean, I think he was the best player in the Revs Academy for them to sign at this point. I think it's a very exciting signing for the Revolution. You know, he's a guy that can play at central midfield, kind of a two-way box-to-box guy. So I think he could fit into the Revs diamond. With that said, you know, Bruce Arena has never really been one of those play-the-kids guys that, you know, throws the young guys out there really at any point in his career. And I don't really expect that to change. I don't think Noel Buck is going to have a huge role with the first team this year. I think he's going to get minutes in the Open Cup. I think he might get some minutes, you know, late in games when the Revolution are in a comfortable position. But I still think he's going to see most of his minutes at Revs 2 this year. I'd love to be proven wrong. And I think Noel Buck is going to have a bright future with the Revolution. I just don't think that this year he's going to get a ton of minutes. You know, and it, you know, he looked good from what I've heard in the first preseason game. Obviously, we couldn't watch that other than on some, you know, streams from fans in the crowd, which I don't think you can glean too much out of. But, you know, it should be reminded that Damian Rivera has looked very good for the Revolution in past preseasons, and that has not translated to any really first team minutes. So I think the future is very bright for Noel Buck, but I think you shouldn't get your expectations up too high for him to have much of an impact this season with the Revolution. I think, you know, he's playing at a position where the Revolution have, you know, a lot of numbers, if not necessarily the best quality depth, depending on how you feel about Tristan, Kaptoum, McNamara, et cetera. So I just don't think he's going to have – I don't think there's an opportunity for him to get that many first-team minutes this year. And I don't think Bruce Arena is a guy that's going to, you know, try to force minutes for a young guy just because he's a young guy with a bright future.
Yes, and just for additional context too, I remember when Damian Rivera signed, and I think the year he signed, he scored 2 goals in a preseason game, and everyone was expecting him to kind of hop on and get some first team minutes, and they just never came. I still don't think he's ever made his MLS debut, and Damian Rivera is still on this team, and so but he's getting most of his minutes at Revs too. So I think Buck is gonna kind of be of the same fate. He's only 16 years old, so he will still be developing in Revs 2. I just kind of see this as them locking him down. I know. I think he trained with Nottingham Forest, some team in England a few weeks ago.
Sounds right.
So I think this is just a matter of the Revs locking him down. He did have 5 goals and 1 assist last year in USL League 1 across 28 matches. I think this is kind of a developmental move. He signed to a contract through the 2025 season with an option for 2026. So, yeah, I just don't expect him to play. I mean, if I were a gambling man, I'd probably put his over-under around 10 minutes. I mean, maybe he'll kind of come in late, but he'd still have to make the 18. Yeah, there's just a lot of bodies in front of him. The Revs are expected to compete this year. Maybe if they were developing and rebuilding, maybe you give some minutes to the kids. But, yeah, I kind of expect this to be – sorry, I should say in the MLS season. I do expect him to make some appearances in the U.S. Open Cup, which is coming back this year. Maybe we will see him in the Champions League just because the first – couple of games in the Champions League are probably going to be walkovers. They really shouldn't be that difficult, and maybe you want to give Buck a start in 45 minutes just to kind of get him in tune with everyone else. But I do not expect him to play a huge amount. This is probably going to be a signing for the future looking ahead.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I should point out that Rivera did make his MLS debut last year in August and played 28 minutes and a comfortable 4-1 Revolution victory over Cincinnati. So maybe we'll see something similar for Buck this year if the Revs get off to a big lead. But otherwise, I think he's an Open Cup player. I heard you talking about the League's Cup a few episodes ago. Maybe we'll see some action in that. That's probably more likely than Champions League, but we'll see.
Yeah, League's Cup. That is my interest in League's Cup has not increased since that episode. one more thing, too, we should note while we're talking about some Revs 2. There are a couple of players over in California. The Revs sent 4 Revs 2 players to California for preseason. Buck, who is now signed. Ryan Spalding, who I believe they should sign, and we'll kind of get back into a reason on why they should soon. Connor Presley and Jake Rosensky are all training with the senior team. So if the Revs make another signing, I would say Spalding, Presley, and Rosensky, who I'm probably mispronouncing his name, they might be the next contenders, is kind of training for a spot on the supplemental roster there. And then on top of that, there is another more Revs 2 news, and I am going to mispronounce this name horribly. I probably should not even try this, but Esmir Bajranktarevic. That is as close as I'm going to get. I am so sorry if that is way off. But another 16-year-old for Revs 2 has been called into US U20 camp. We did get a question on whether or not he will make an impact with the Revs, but he has not even been signed to a USL, or sorry, an MLS contract yet. He's still on a USL contract, so he cannot play for Revs 1. I believe he can play in the US Open Cup. I'm not so sure about that. I'd have to double check.
We don't know all the details now because the Revs 2 has completely changed now that it's part of the MLS Next Pro as opposed to part of the USL 2. And I don't think we have kind of enough information to know how that interaction is going to work. I'd heard some things that it was going to be easier to get, you know, Revs 2 players to play for the first team this year because of, you know, they're all under the same umbrella instead of under the USL umbrella. But I haven't seen that in writing, and I don't know how that's going to play out. So I think there's a lot of kind of unknown there. But I would assume he could play in the Open Cup. I would assume.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? I don't even know if the US Open Cup knows really what's going on anymore with the US Open Cup, but I digress. Let's go talk a little Champions League here, Sean. What are our expectations for the lineup in the Champions League? Ronnie Smalls asked us that specifically about the first leg, but we can kind of cover both legs if you have any thoughts on that. I've kind of played my hand in previous podcasts of how I think these games on Cavalier will be more or less preseason. This really should not be a difficult opponent for the Revolution, and I expect a lot of rotation, and I expect this to kind of be a warm-up for the MLS regular season, especially too. I think the season opener is a few days after that second leg. I think it's that right. Saturday, right? So they have 3 days off there after that second leg. But what do you expect for the first leg of that Champions League game?
Yeah, to be honest, it's made a lot easier for the Revolution that both games are at home, so they're not worrying about tiring guys out by traveling. I see no reason why the Revolution shouldn't play their best 11 in that first game, hopefully run up the score, and then, you know, rest everybody for the second leg so they're 100% for Portland. That's the tact I would try to take, and so I would assume that, you know, knowing what we know now, assuming Adam Buxa isn't sold in the next couple weeks, which I think is probably not going to happen, could change, though. I would say Adam Buxa, Gustavo Bo up top, Carles Heel behind them. I think in your midfield, you're going to have Sebastian Legette. And the one question mark is who's next to Sebastian Legette? You know, it was McNamara, was your regular starter last year. You know, we saw Cap Toom get some minutes and Tristan get some minutes in the first preseason game. Is one of them going to overtake Tommy McNamara? I don't know. That's my question mark. I'm going to go with McNamara right now, the safe choice, but I wouldn't be shocked if that's a position that ends up being Cap Toom. Matt Polster behind them, your standard defense, Andrew Farrell, Henry Kessler in the center, Brandon Bye on the right, DeJuan Jones on the left, Matt Turner in goal. I don't see any reason why you shouldn't play, you know, your starting 11 in that game. And you know, playing a competitive game with your starting 11 a week before the season starts is probably a good thing to get you ready for that first game of the regular season, and might help you even more than a preseason game because it's a game that actually matters. And ideally, you win that game by a lot of goals. And, you know, the game before the Portland game, you play your B team. And see what they can do, and hopefully, you know, that works out and you're very comfortable, and then you have a fully rested team for Portland. I think that's your ideal situation.
Do you think they potentially run out the starting 11? Because I know Bruce last year would ride, you know, there was a lot of fixture congestion, and at certain points that he kind of rolled the same lineups out week after week, and, you know, or into midweek games. Do you think there's a possibility that if it is, I'll say, 2-0 in the first leg, you think he runs out his first team again?
Yeah, I think if there's any doubt going into the second league that he does run out the first team again, and then, you know, maybe by halftime he's pretty comfortable and he makes two or three subs to, you know, take Carles Heel out, Gustavo Boa, kind of the older players that you're worried about injury concerns and that are most important. But, you know, again, I think that's what you're hoping doesn't happen. You're hoping you put it away in the first leg and don't have to worry about it.
We did get one more question here from Rally Revs fan. He says, where do the Revs currently sit in the East with these roster moves? What do they need to do to remain at the top? And he has a second question, but I'll go with that one first. Sean, where do you think the Revs start in the East, and what do you think they need to do to retain their spot as the best team in the East?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone that looks at what the Revolution did last year and expects them to do better this year as far as regular season or as far as even matching regular season. You know, that's not realistic. They're not going to be a team that breaks the points record next year. I think the East has gotten better. And, you know, I think there's a lot of question marks for the Revolution around Adam Buksa. Now, if Adam Buksa is here for the Revolution for the season, I see no reason why the Revolution, even with Matt Turner gone, can't still be a team fighting for that top spot in the East. You know, they finished first in the East by 19 points last year. So there's a lot of room for the Revolution to be worse this season and still be competing for the top spot in the East. And I expect if Adam Buksa sticks around that they will be. But I do think it's going to be a very competitive battle at the top. I mean, Toronto FC, I think, is going to be better in 2023 more than 2022. But just Bob Bradley being their coach, even before Insigne comes, is going to make them a much better team. You know, I think Atlanta started the season poorly last year and got better towards the end. I think they'll be better next year. I know they've, you know, still got a lot of challenges with their roster, but just, you know, knowing how much they spend, I think they're going to be good this year. You know, New York City FC obviously came on strong at the end next year. There's going to be a lot of competition at the top of the East, and I think the Revolution are going to be in that mix, but I certainly don't think they're going to run away with the East. And if Adam Buksa leaves, then things become a ton more challenging, unless Bruce Arena has something up his sleeve to bring in another designated player to fill that spot right away. Because I think the Revolution without Adam Buksa and without Matt Turner, you know, are more of a bottom tier playoff team than a team fighting for the top spot.
Yeah, and Tejan Buchanan. That's another.
And Tejan Buchanan. And the one thing I will say is I see a lot of people saying, you know, when are the Revolution going to replace Tejan Buchanan? You said it earlier. Sebastian Legette is the replacement for Tejan Buchanan. And no, it is not a like-for-like replacement because Tejan Buchanan is, you know, one of the best wingers in the league. And we saw how good he could be against the U.S. today. But Sebastian Legette fills the same spot as Tejan did in the diamond, but it fills it more comfortably because Sebastian Legette is actually more of a central midfielder, which is what the diamond requires. So I'm assuming the Revolution play the same formation as they did last year. And if that's the case, it is Legette that slots right in for Tejan Buchanan. And to be honest, I think fits that spot better than he did. That's not to say Legette is a better player than Tejan Buchanan. It's just to say he's a better central midfielder than Tejan Buchanan. If you're saying wingers, Tejan is certainly a much better player on the wing than Legette is. But yeah, I think that's your Tejan Buchanan replacement in the lineup. And I think the Revolution are just fine with that. But, you know, everything you have to look at different if Adam Buksa is gone, because, you know, the whole diamond works because of Adam Buksa and Gustavo Bo up top. And I think if you take Buksa out of that equation and don't find an adequate replacement, there's a lot of question marks about this Revs team.
Yeah, we'll get to kind of the depth at striker in a little bit here too, because I agree with everything you said. I think that the way the Revs drop in the standings, you mentioned the gap between first and second, and you know, the Revs lost to the eventual MLS Cup champion in penalty kicks, which is more or less random, but you know, they went 2-1-1 against the eventual MLS Cup champion last year. Nashville is going to the West and they're being replaced with Charlotte. No one in the East really has made big jumps on the Revs in 2022. I mean, I really don't think the Revs could easily finish first right now. If this is the team they go in with their for the season, I think they could be first, even without Tejan, even with Turner for half a season. If they keep Buksa for the full season, yeah, the Revs are certainly close to first place. These are updated MLS Cup odds. I'll just run through the Eastern Conference teams. The Revs are currently 7-1 to win MLS Cup. New York City FC is 10-1. And then below that, you have Atlanta, 16-1. Colorado, Los Angeles, Philadelphia is 16-1. Columbus is 20-1. New York, 20-1. I mean, which one of these teams? Orlando is 25-1. Toronto is 25-1. Miami is 40-1. None of these teams really scare me. So I think a lot of people they see Tejan leave and they, you know, Legette had a bad season last year. I think they expect a big drop off in quality there, but as you said, I think Legette fits the diamond a little bit better. And I think Bo and Buksa really work well in the diamond. I think Carlos Gil kind of works well in that diamond. I know he's a bit of a roaming player, but I think they are committed to going with the diamond, and I think Legette is the Tejan Buchanan replacement, and I think he'll be fine. Will they get 73 points? No. Will they have as successful a season as they did last year? No. They won't break the MLS points record. But I got to say, if the Revs don't finish in the top three and they keep Buksa all season, something has gone wrong, because I do not see them falling massively down the standings page unless there is a big injury. Unless Buksa is sold and they do not replace him, I'm not worried at all.
Yeah, and the one team that stands out to me again is Toronto, is that they're the big wild card, because you look at what Bruce Arena did to a Revolution team that was really struggling and kind of overnight made them a playoff team. I think Bob Bradley is capable of doing the same thing to Toronto, and Toronto has the added benefit of having owners that are willing to spend whatever it takes to make that team successful, including buying out really big contracts, spending insane amounts on Insigne. You know, they just signed Carlos Salcedo, who's going to anchor their back line. You know, I don't know how good that Toronto team is going to be this year. I'm sure they're going to be very, very good in 2023. But, you know, with Bob Bradley can have the same impact on a team that Bruce Arena can. He's that good of a coach. So just for that alone, and knowing that they're going to spend the money to be successful, whatever that takes, I think Toronto is a team to watch out for the Revs this year. But I don't see any reason why the Revolution, again, assuming Buxa stays, you know, can't be challenging for first again.
Yeah, and no injuries. Because if Carlos Hill goes down, then, right, okay, we can talk about borderline playoffs. We can talk about, you know, losing games at home to an inferior opponent. But right now, I just don't see any excuse. So,
well, that is a huge point, because I don't think their depth is necessarily good enough to see them through if they do have a serious injury to Carlos Hill. And, you know, even though Carlos Hill was out for a while last year, I think the Revolution did get relatively lucky with injuries. They didn't have too many serious injuries last season. Overall, they were relatively healthy.
And you know, the other thing too, which really bothers me, is the Revs did not do anything in the summer transfer window last year. If they're selling Matt Turner and they're getting an additional $1 million in GAM, I mean, when Bruce gets resources, he spends them. And I know there was a signing last year that fell through in the summer window, and we never figured out who that was or what position was going to be improved. But, you know, let's hypothetically say Brad Knighton is the guy, and he plays good, not great. You know, he's a plus player. You know, the Revs now suddenly have assets that they can go trade with, and they can go get another central midfielder or another player to improve their starting lineup, or, you know, get a backup at a valuable position or something like that. I mean, they're going to improve this team in the summer. I said that last year. I you know, I really shouldn't say things like that, because I said that last year and they didn't. But let me say I will be surprised if they don't make additions this summer, just because when Bruce gets assets, he spends them. Do you have anything to add, Sean, before we move on?
No, I just, you know, it's a frustrating point I don't want to spend too much time on. But yeah, they should have done something last summer to improve the team, because when they did get to the playoffs and you look to their bench to switch things up when things weren't going great, you know, there weren't necessarily the right options, particularly to fit the formation the Revolution were playing. So I think, you know, they shouldn't make the same mistake next year if they find themselves in a situation where they're playing really well, but could tweak one or two spots or could add their depth in one or two spots to make the team even better. They got to make sure they take that next year, because I do think that hurt them in the playoffs.
And I don't know if we talked about this on the last podcast or if this was news in the last podcast, but apparently the Revs were in on Kellen Acosta too, who was traded to, was it LAFC or the Galaxy? I forget.
Yeah, I'm blanking too. It was LAFC, so that'll be he'll be a good addition to them.
I knew it was one of the LAs, but I think it was 1.1 million guaranteed, up to 1.5, so it was cheaper than Legette. But it's almost a shame that this Turner news is breaking now, because maybe in some apparently the Revs were in on Acosta. You know, Colorado and Arsenal, both Kroenke teams. Maybe you could have worked out some sort of backroom deal where you used the allocation money you received for Turner and got Acosta at a discount, but alas, the Revs end up with just Legette. But as I say, I this team is very strong and should be top three team in the East, potentially top one, and I think it's going to get better as the year goes on. I don't think it's final form, but we'll see. But Rally Revs fan does have another question here. Who will be the biggest breakout this year, a la DeJuan Jones last year? Sean, who do you think is going to be the biggest breakout for the Revs this year?
You know, I don't think anyone's going to be quite as big of a breakout as DeJuan Jones, who, you know, made himself the best left back in MLS. I don't expect anyone to do that. So I think when you're trying to figure out who's going to be the best breakout, you kind of got to look at somebody that, you know, underperformed last year, right? A guy like Wilfried Kaptum, or a guy like Arnór Tristesson, or a guy like Christian Mafla, who may be gone. You know what, you have expectations for Sebastian Legette, Carles Hill, Gustavo Bo, Adam Buxa. I don't think they can be your breakout guys. You know, I think Henry Kessler is going to have a better season than he did last year. I think he's going to, you know, the national team experience he has is going to help him, and he's going to be a more confident player. But I wouldn't feel right calling him the breakout player, because we already know he's a really good guy, really good player for the Revs. You know, Brandon Bae has some room to grow. I don't know that I'd pick him as the breakout player. I think I got to go with either Kaptum or Tristesson, neither of whom I actually think is going to be the breakout player. But, you know, I have to look at somebody like that. So, you know, maybe I'll say, you know, Tristason's going to have a better year this year and be the breakout player. I guess at the same time, I could say, you know, Brad Knighton, if he's playing every day, could be the breakout player. But I'm going to go with Tristason with a very low confidence level, but also a very high confidence level of saying that nobody is going to, you know, make the leap that DeJuan Jones made to becoming like the best player at their position in the league this year.
Yeah, the two names that hopped out to me was Kaptum and Tristason. I think Tristason disappointed last year. I could see him kind of fulfilling the expectations we originally had for him. But also Kaptum had some moments last year. He kind of had some flashes where he had some good dribbles, some good ball possession. And I don't know, I could certainly see if Kaptum comes in healthy, I could see him competing for that starting spot. But again, I'm kind of with you where I err on the side of caution and I'm not too optimistic. The only other name that I'll say that I think really could have a breakout season is Brandon Bye. And he's got that right back slot kind of, you know, locked down. I don't think anyone's really challenging him for that right back spot right now. And I think he's kind of been, you know, shown flashes at a lot of times, but also at times has really frustrated people, especially with his crossing, with his offensive ability. If the Revs kind of go with this diamond formation and really rely on the wingbacks, I could see a situation where Brandon Bye is able to get up a little bit more, kind of score with his head a little bit more. Maybe, you know, I could see him getting some more assists with his crossing if that kind of comes up and meets his potential. Because there have been times he's floated in some really, really nice crosses. He's just not consistent with it. So I could see Brandon Bye really turning in a great, great season. But
my dark horse is Ryan Spalding if DeJuan Jones does get sold, which I don't think is going to happen. But that's my dark horse pick if DeJuan Jones was to get sold.
Of course, or Jacob Johnson Jackson Jacobson if he signs his first team contract. He still has not been signed to an MLS contract. I do expect him to sign a contract now that Matt Turner is leaving. And I think the Revs, worst case scenario, they just carry four goalkeepers if they want to go and get another one. But I do expect them to sign him to an MLS contract now, just kind of coming full circle. But I don't think he's starting. But if he does, you never know. You never know. Maybe he's the next diamond in the rough. So you talked about Ryan Spalding. Christian Mafla is right now the backup left back, but not expected to be for long. He did not travel to California with the team. He is in New England, shoveling snow like the rest of us. And the reason why is because apparently there are some reports coming out of Colombia that he is tied to Deportivo Cali. Apparently it is a loan. I did not find confirmation on that. I think that is a rumor. I don't know if it's a report or a rumor, but yeah, Christian Mafla might be going down to Colombia. Sean, what are your thoughts on the Christian Mafla to Colombia rumor?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've talked about him before as a potential buyout candidate for the Revolution. You know, I think he's a guy that they never should have signed. I think it's, you know, a Revolution historical practice of signing guys that have lengthy knee injury histories. And, you know, he has that list. You know, DeJuan Jones is clearly the best left back on this roster, you know, debatably the best left back in the league. So, you know, the most Mafla is going to be doing is getting spot starts or rotational minutes for DeJuan Jones, and to have an international player that's making, what is it, close to $400,000 as a backup left back just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, the Revolution need to move on from Mafla, and if they have the opportunity to transfer him, even if it's for nothing, I think they should do that and take it. And I think Ryan Spalding is just waiting in the wings. Of course, he made his Revolution first team preseason debut yesterday and gave up a penalty kick. But other than that, you know, we didn't get to watch the game and see how he did. But he's very promising, looked very good for Revs too, and, you know, should be good enough to be DeJuan Jones' backup on this roster for a lot less money and not taking up an international spot.
And not taking up a senior roster spot, he could fit onto the supplemental roster spot too, which is also very helpful. And I believe Ryan Spalding was on the team of the year for USL League One. So he's at the age where I think if you're going to promote him, it's time to do it. I certainly think it would save them an international spot and some space. So I think that is a really win-win-win for everyone involved. I think it works for the Revs. They free up some very valuable roster space. And I think Mafla starts to play again because I think he is too good to make some cameo appearances here and there and not really get to play. One other rumor here, Marcos Dias, a Brazilian striker, 20 years old, from Brazil. I forget which team he plays U20s for, but he is tied to the Revs. Apparently, the Revs are interested in a loan for 2022 with an obligation of buying 50% of his rights if he reaches a certain percentage, a certain number of goals. It is unclear if he is part of the U22 initiative or if he is Revs 2. Based on kind of the structure of the loan or what's rumored, by the way, that is reported by a friend of the program, Gustavo Lopez, great scoop, Gustavo. But based on kind of that wording about it, how it's a loan and it's based on how many goals he scores, I assume it is tied to the first team and potentially the first ever U22 player for the Revolution, although that has not been confirmed. Sean, what are your thoughts on this rumor of Marcos Dias coming to the Revolution?
Yeah, you know, I'd be lying if I said I'd seen much beyond highlight tapes of him. But I do think it's something that we've talked about before, that the Revolution need to make use of the U-22 initiative. So if, you know, he has the talent to be signed to the U-22 initiative and that makes sense for the Revolution, I think it's exciting that they're doing that. Again, I don't think Bruce Arena has the best history of, you know, bringing along young players and giving them minutes. So I'd like to see more of that. And, you know, building for the future, signing a guy to the U-22 initiative, I think is a great move. And the fact that the Revolution are down in Brazil scouting these guys and, you know, giving them opportunities to come up here, signing a 20-year-old striker from Brazil is kind of exactly what I would like to see the Revolution do to position themselves better for the long term. You know, because we can talk about the Revs striker depth right now. You know, it's not great. So if they can find somebody, a young guy in Brazil that can, you know, give them some minutes off the bench now and potentially be the, you know, Adam Buxa replacement long term, or the Gustavo Bo replacement when Gustavo Bo, you know, potentially retires or leaves in 2 years, I think that would be a win-win for the Revolution.
Yeah, can we talk about the depth of the striker position? Because I will say we've been kind of optimistic about the Revs and their chances here, but I wanted to very specifically say, assuming there is no injuries, because I think if Buxa or Bo goes down, you can probably expect a little bit of regression. I don't know if they're both going to be involved in the Golden Boot race, but if one of them goes down, I really don't know who is taking over those minutes. Teal Bunbury has been traded to Nashville. Not a huge Edward Kizza fan. Maybe he makes some progress this year. Okay. Justin Renix is there. Okay. It seems like backup striker is a very, very big need. And usually you need a third striker just to take up minutes and kind of get a spot start here and there. If Poland calls up Buxa for some reason, if Bo is out for some reason, you really need kind of a reliable third striker. And we were really spoiled with Teal Bunbury there. Now they don't really have that. To me, that strikes me as the biggest need. Do you agree?
I mean, completely. If you lose either of those two guys, your backup strikers have a combined zero MLS goals. You know, I don't know how you can be excited about that. Renick's got 1 minute with the first team last year. So I don't think Bruce Arena has a lot of faith in him. He had 29 minutes the year before that. You know, it's hard to imagine he'd be ready to step up. And, you know, Edward Kizza, Bruce Arena obviously had faith in him to draft an international player in the first round that's taken up an international spot and bring him back this year. But at the same time, I think we were questioning whether or not he'd even be back this year. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely a spot the Revolution need to improve upon, especially if there's any question whether or not Buxa is going to be around. But, you know, like you said, you know, these guys can get injured. Gustavo Bo is, you know, on the wrong side of 30. What is he, 30, 32 this season? Going to be 33? He's going to be 32 in February. So, you know, they're probably not going to be able to play every game this year, and your options off the bench are not great. I don't think Teal Bunbury had a particularly good season last year. I don't think I would have been all that confident if he was the backup this year, but I would have been a lot more confident than I am with the two options they have. So that is 100% an area of need for the Revolution. And maybe Marcos Diaz, if he comes, is the answer there and can provide some minutes off the bench. It would be awesome to have a, you know, 20-year-old guy that has a lot of promise that, you know, can provide some minutes off the bench and be a player of the future. Because I have trouble seeing Justin Renix as the Revolution striker of the future right now. I think when the Revolution signed him and he'd came off the U-20 World Cup, there were some hopes of that. But the lack of any real minutes under Bruce Arena does not give me any hope that, you know, all of a sudden that his minutes have been declining every year, they're going to start picking up and he's going to start playing better.
Well, I believe he kind of played sort of as a winger almost with Revs too, and now they don't need wingers. Now they're playing in Diamond too. So it seems like he's kind of moved around a little bit, and I don't know, it just hasn't really clicked. If they don't sign Diaz, I would hope Renix is playing a little bit and they give him some minutes here and there, because we need to figure out what we have with him. His time is kind of running out. I believe this is his third or fourth year in the Revolution system. But kind of same with Kizza too. I mean, I you kind of have to figure out what you have there, but not a lot of trust after a big drop off with Buxa and Bo at the striker position. And I think Diaz fits the bill if he is a U-22 signing. I can't say that I've scouted him immensely or how great he is, but if he is worthy of a U-22 tag, it seems like this really fits the bill of where the Revs kind of need a U-22 player on the roster. So we got some last minute questions here, Sean, right in before the buzzer here. Green, blue, teal forever asks us, over under 9,000 attendance for the Champions League away leg on February 15th. And he is, by the way, he is assuming a 6 p.m. start time. So a lot of that, you know, a lot of those people will be coming from work on a probably very cold Tuesday. What's your prediction for the attendance for the first leg of the Champions League game?
I'm going to take under on 9,000. I think it's going to be a miserable day out. And the fact that it's 6 o'clock on a weekday, while that'll make the temperature slightly better, makes it very difficult for anyone, you know, coming from the city from work to get to. I'm going to take the under on 9,000. I'd love to see a good crowd there, but I just don't expect it.
Over under 0.5 references on 98.5 about the Champions League outside of the weekly Bruce Arena interview.
Oh, under easily. No question.
Tetra and Rich not going to be covering it. That's really disappointing. We got one more question too. Two right before the buzzer here. Sean, Ava asks us, what kind of performance should we expect from the Revs in the Champions League games? We kind of covered that, but we'll go, I think she means beyond the first round. Do we have a chance for better or worse? And what do we know about the teams we're up against? We talked about Cavalier a little bit a few episodes ago, and I kind of talked about, I went through their roster. I believe they have a few players that are in the Haiti national team pool, but also as a comp, Zach Haravo is in there. And so I believe Cavalier is probably going to play similarly to a maybe USL League One or championship team. So the Revs should really kind of, as I alluded to earlier, they really should walk over them, especially with two home legs. Cavalier will be making the travel. And so you certainly hope the Revs kind of take care of business. I really don't expect this to be much of a fight. And the other thing too is a lot of their season was canceled last year, so they're probably not in great form. But beyond that, you have Saprissa and Pumas. I expect Pumas to beat the Revs in the second round. Sean, any thoughts here?
I agree with you. I think, you know, the Revolution absolutely needs to get past the first round. You know, there's no question about it. It'd be a huge embarrassment. Maybe even more embarrassing than when they lost to Joe Public, you know, 12 years ago, which was, you know, among the most embarrassing moments in Revolution history. So I see the Revolution winning that relatively easily. And if they don't, it's concerning. But then, you know, I think it's probably going to be Pumas in the second round. You know, the Costa Rican teams haven't been as scary in the Champions League as they have been in the past. I think Philadelphia beat Saprissa something like 5-0 over two legs last year. You know, historically, Costa Rican teams were doing better than MLS teams. You know, the Revolution faced Alajuelense the first couple times they were in Champions League and you know, lost twice to them. But I think my expectation is that Pumas beat Saprissa and then the Revolution play Pumas. And that'll be a very, very, very difficult game for the Revolution. Anytime you're playing a Mexican team in the Champions League, it's very difficult. Pumas didn't have the best year last year. I think they were, you know, a mid-table Mexican team. But, you know, if they can beat Pumas, that'd be huge. And then, you know, likely in the semifinal, they'd face another Mexican team, either Santos Laguna or Cruz Azul, unless, you know, CF Montreal, who I still want to call the Montreal Impact, you know, were to get an upset. You know, I don't know. I think winning the first round is a must for the Revolution, and then anything after that is kind of a bonus. But they ended up on the tough end of the bracket after the first round, because three of the four Mexican teams are on the Revolution side of the bracket, where I think, you know, Seattle, Colorado, New York City FC, ending up on the side of the bracket where just Leon is there was probably more favorable past the first round.
Yeah, Sean, you know, you kind of went through three of the four teams there in the bottom part of the bracket. You mentioned Montreal and the two Mexican teams. Really no respect for Forge FC coming out of that side of the bracket. I don't know. It's those Canadian Premier League teams, man. You might regret that one, but hopefully when they emerge victorious in the Champions League, I'm sure Cursed Revs will be all over that for you disrespecting Forge FC. But you are correct. The Revs potentially have to go through three Mexican teams to win Champions League. I really don't expect them to go too far. So enjoy Cavalier while you can, because it certainly will go up a little bit. They're going to go up a few levels in competition beyond the first round. And, you know, there's always how much do the Revs care about this competition type of aspect to it. You know, I'm not totally sure, you know, if this is going to be the primary focus of the Revs, especially knowing that they have some long odds. So I am not putting any money down on the Revs winning Champions League.
You know, I do got to say, since you mentioned Forge FC, they play their home games at Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton. So they'll be making Cruz Azul play on that terrible, terrible cold field that the U.S. played on today. So that'll be kind of a fun series to watch with Cruz Azul having to play up in Hamilton on that, you know, tough turf and the freezing cold, and then Forge FC having to go play at the historic Estadio Azteca in Mexico City. Quite the contrast in atmospheres and fields and temperatures and just about everything between that series.
Now I hope we don't play there. Matt Turner plays poorly in Hamilton. Tim Hortons Field, What's can you do it on a cold rainy day in Stoke? So was it, can you do it on a cold freezing cold day at Tim Hortons Field? I think that is the CONCACAF version of that, you know.
It would be a much better situation if the Revolution were playing at Dunkin' Donuts Stadium in Boston and their new soccer specific stadium going up against Tim Hortons Field. That would just be a fantastic series if we could get that to happen in a few years.
Let's wrap up here. We're getting silly. This is too silly for me. News and notes. Some old friends found new teams. Bobby Shuttleworth has signed with Atlanta United. Jahlil Anibaba has signed with the Columbus Crew, which is unfortunate that we have to like someone on the Columbus Crew, but here we are. You mentioned earlier that Adam Buxa to Pisa. It seems dead. Pisa has signed a new striker, so it seems like whatever rumors were there is kind of gone away for the time being. It also seems like the Revs probably have no interest in selling Adam Buxa, as for reasons we've already talked about how there'd be a major drop-off and the Revs would be kind of screwed there. Clint Dempsey, Soccer Hall of Fame, former Revolution player. Awesome. And the Revs reportedly interested in a central midfielder from Standard Liège out of the Belgian league, Samuel Bastien. I believe he has 2 years left of his contract. Transfer Market has his market value around $3 million, which seems very high. That seems DP level almost. So I'm not sure if that one passes the sniff test. That might be just a player the Revs are scouting potentially for the future. But there would have to be a transfer fee attached somehow. This isn't a free transfer, so I'm not going to put a lot of stock into that one. But that is a rumor going around. And also, I think we have to acknowledge the retirement of a certain Hall of Fame quarterback who has given us a lot of memories over the years. So just wanted to say happy retirement, Ben Roethlisberger. Sean, any thoughts before we leave here today?
No, I mean, I just can't believe we're 2 weeks out from the Revolution season opener. Here's the hoping that the weather is a bit nicer than it has been this past weekend when the Revolution are playing at Gillette Stadium.
Yes. Hopefully we get some better weather. Could you imagine like a 2-foot snowstorm with the Revs? I mean, boy, over under 9 fans for that.
I feel bad for Cavalli that they're going to have to come up here and play in New England weather. And, you know, they don't get to play a home game. Instead, they get 2 games in freezing cold Foxborough on the turf because their stadium isn't good enough for the CONCACAF Champions League. That is a huge bummer for them. And I do feel bad for them and hope that they're going to, you know, at least get a good sum of money, you know, off the gates or something for that, because I'm sure that the situation in Haiti is not great. And the fact that they have to play 2 games up here in the freezing cold is unfair for them.
You can follow us on Twitter at Revolution Recap, and be sure to follow our Revolution Recap Instagram and Facebook pages. Oh, Sean, where can people follow you on social media?
You can follow me on Twitter at Sean L. Donahue.
And also be sure to follow our partners, The Bent Musket, on Twitter at The Bent Musket, and follow their work online at www.thebentmusket.com for great year-round coverage of the Revolution, one of the only online publications that follows the Revs year-round, just like us. And be sure to check out our sponsor, Galasso Kits, at galassokits.com, and follow them on Twitter and Instagram as well. And be sure to use promo code REVSRECAP for 15% off your order of all that Arsenal gear that you are going to buy. And also, please make sure you are subscribed on iTunes or wherever you are listening. Please rate and review us 5 stars. You can now rate and review on Spotify. So Spotify listeners, please make sure you take the time, kind of scroll around, try to figure out where exactly to review and give us a 5-star review so we can get some over there. It helps people looking for Revolution content find it. And yeah, we will be back when more stuff happens. I imagine we'll get one more podcast in before the Cavalli games. I assume there will be some more news between now and then, but you never know.
One would hope.
One would hope. Maybe that Marcos Diaz signing does come through. But either way, we will be back soon. Until then, thank you everyone for listening, and go Revs.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.